We're on page 187, and this topic is a really, really, really important topic because it's not just because it deals with, you know, how you're supposed to know if your food is what's called kosher. That's not that relevant in the world of, you know, mass production and mass kashrut when you're not really kashering anything yourself in your backyard. But there's also a couple of very interesting principles, which I think we're going to find fascinating. And it's also going to be a nice, you know, historical. This is a good, it's a great topic. So here we go. First of all, let's talk about basics. That's what's nice about this book is that it really builds it from the sources and outwards. So the sources on page 187, the Torah tells us, Anshe kodesh tihili ubasar basadeh trefa lo suchelu. They were supposed to be people that are holy, and I'll translate literally, meat, flesh that's in the field is a trefa, right? So literally, litrof is a verb, which means to rupture. We see this by Yosef. Yosef's father says when he sees his cloak dipped in blood, Tarov Taraf Yosef, that he's been ruptured, devoured, ripped apart by wild animals. Okay, so that's the source for the word trefa. Lo tochel, you can't eat it, instead give it to the dog. I mean, you can benefit from it. I can feed it to my animal. I can feed it to my pets, but I can't eat it myself. Okay, so that's the pasuk. And this is the word that we use is treif. Now, we have to, the problem is that we use words that don't always mean what they're supposed to be used for. We use the word treif in the vernacular to mean not kosher, but that's an incorrect use of the word. The word treif means ripped up, ripped apart. So we have to, for our intents and purposes, let's use the words properly. So the word treif means ripped apart. So it comes along the Gemara and explains the Mishnah. The Mishnah says there are 18 trefot. There are 18 signs that an animal could actually have a damage and a blemish. So if an animal is going to die in the next 12 months, or shall we say based on medical research that they had at the time of the Mishnah, there were 18 signs that if an animal had these signs, it meant they're not going to live out the year, okay? Or as we'll learn in a minute, the majority of an animal with this defect wouldn't live out the year. And so because of that, it's no good. The problem is, how can you tell before you slaughter the animal, okay? So comes along source two, Gemara Nechulin. How do we know you're supposed to follow the majority? How do we know you're supposed to follow the majority? Meaning, says the Gemara, it's so rare that a lot of these damages actually occur. So do I really need to check? So the answer is I can go after the majority. What's the average animal out there? What do you mean, from where do we know? I'll tell you why. The Torah tells us, Achi Rabim Lahatot. The Torah says, go after the majority. Ruba de Isa, come on. It's very simple. And I referenced this last week, the week before. We go after whatever the majority is that's in front of us, right? For example, I think I even said this. This is the classic example in the Talmud. We're talking about a case. The case is nine pieces of meat. Sorry. Meaning, in this situation where I find meat lying on the ground and I know there are 10, there are nine chanios, there are nine kosher stores and one non-kosher store. And where is this meat from? And that we're going to make an assumption that the city or the town or the village is locked. No meat comes in and out. Therefore, I can assume that the meat that's in front of me came from one of my local stores. And in my local stores, I have 9 out of 10 are kosher. So statistically, the likelihood, the probability is that this piece of meat in front of me, that is no sign no symbol, no nothing, no marking, came from a kosher store. That's what the Gemara says. Go off to the majority, okay? Rav Acha bar Yaakov Amir, I see Mr. Mishlech, he learns it out from, okay, let me just explain. On Yom Kippur, we have a special, I guess, sacrifice slash procedure where we take two different goats and they have to look the same. They have to literally be identical. And what do? One we bring as a sacrifice, l'fnei Hashem, and we slaughter it in Yerushalayim, in the temple. And the other one we send out to the wilderness to literally be chucked off a cliff. Now, ask the Gemara, I don't understand. Maybe this animal, is the animal that we slaughter, I could tell if it's kosher, I could tell if it's a treif. See, I use the word mistaken too. I could tell it's a treif, eventually I'm going to cut it up and we'll see. But what about the one that we send out to the desert? Maybe, how do we know that it doesn't have a defect? We don't check it for defects. If you check it for a defect, it's dead. You can't do that. So the answer is very simple. Says the Gemara, majority. We go off to the majority. Meaning, the majority of animals that are walking around are not trefot, or else they'd be dropping dead all the time. We don't see animals drop dead regularly. They drop dead occasionally. Usually, there's a very good reason why they drop dead. Okay. That being said, the most animals are not trefot. Rashi comments and says, in source 3, the ahan milsa subchinan, but kinan call 18 trefot. The nikuvot re'ay, b'shud d'shachich be'rita but kinan. There's only one sign that we have to check for. Just one. And that is the lungs. We have to check the lungs because punctured lungs are very, very common. And since punctured lungs are common, we must check them. Okay? And it says in Mishnah, source 4, Elu Trefot Babahima. These are considered trefot, ripped apart signs of an animal. In the event that there's a lung that is, let's say, perforated, right? If it has a hole in it, or that's missing something. Rabbi Shimon Omer, af shetina kev levet hasam funot. Right? Rabbi Shimon says, it needs to be, the hole needs to reach, not just a small little hole on the inner of the lung, but the hole has to go through and reach the bronchia. Okay, so the question is, okay, what's considered a punctured lung? Is it just a punctured lung, you know, take a little bit of a needle and that would puncture it? Or does it have to pierce all the way through the lung and go into the bronchia? So that's the question of how deep must the hole be to render it a trefa. Okay, so summary. Now, that in animal that's a trefa, there are 18 signs of a trefa, but there's only one of those signs that are very, very common and need to be checked. The other signs, we can assume, based on the majority of animals, not just randomly dropping dead, we can assume that the animal that I'm eating in front of me on my plate, or that's in the slaughterhouse, or that's wandering around, does not have any of these. So now, obviously, if you see it's missing a leg, meaning, obviously, if it's to the eye, it's missing an integral limb, right? Okay, that's a given. That would be a problem. But the inner signs, the inside markings that define what a trefa is, those are not that common, with the exception of the piercing of the lung and the definition of a pierce. We see there's two different opinions in the Mishnah itself. Okay. Where do these holes come from? Right? They just like what? Just like show up? Like they just like they'll come out of outer space? So says the Bartanura, who's a commentator on the Mishnah in Source 5, he's going to explain why it is that animals on the root to use, where certain animals have lungs that are punctured. Let's take a look. Source 5. Shnei kurumim dakim yesh l'reya. Okay, biology. The lung has two thin membranes. Neck, by the way, this was written how many years ago? I don't know, 500 years ago. Negev zebelo, zek kishera. One has a nekev, if one has this puncture, and the other one doesn't, it's fine. However, nikvu shehem, both get punctured, which means the puncture is deeper. The haruach yoytzek kishinov chimota. And what you would do is I take the lung, and if you have to blow it up like a balloon, and air would go out, no good, meaning because the membrane is pierced. So think about your balloon. If you blow into a balloon and there's a hole in your balloon, you blow up the balloon, collapses. So too, if I go to my lung and I blow air into it, if it puffs up a little bit, good. If you see that air escapes, no good. Umitam reya shenikva. And this idea that the lung has a nekev, has this hole. Nasru kol hasirichot shebireya. Okay, sirichot. This is the word that's used in the kashrut industry. Sirichot are these, the English here says there's an adhesion. Okay, because I'll tell you what happens. Are you ready for this? This is why it's even more complicated. This sounds super easy. I don't need to be an expert. Take my lung, start my animal, blow a little bit, puffs up, good. No air escaping, no holes. Not so simple. Because if you have a srichot, if you have this adhesion in the lung, kishehem b'makom da'avide le'intuke, you have these adhesions in the lung that are found, and sometimes they come off. The fish in sricha below nekev. Ah, when you have a sricha, it means there's a hole. And a sricha, these adhesions, can be found in the lung. And sometimes they're blocking the hole that you cannot see. So if you blow, air won't come out. But you know why it's not coming out? Not because there's no hole. But there's this adhesion, something, I guess. I don't know. I think this is true medically or scientifically, I should say. When there's a hole in the lung, the animal wants to block that hole for obvious reasons. So it creates these adhesions in order to kind of fix itself, right? It's like a self-fixing mechanism. So if there's an adhesion, it's a sign that the lung is perforated. Now, if you're an animal, you're pretty cool because you get to fix yourself. So that's very helpful. But from a kashrut perspective, it's still considered a damage. It's a damage that then got kind of, you know, patched up. It's like you have a hole in your tire and you patch it up. Well, it's not really ideal to have a patched up tire. So that's the story. Oh, because a sricha, these adhesions are a sign, there's a hole. Because in a lung, you have to understand, there's tons and tons of liquids. And these liquids get filled into the lungs and they get thick. And these liquids come out through these holes. And a little bit, what happens? That these are the liquids help create these adhesions and they kind of help lock up these holes. And that's what happens. The adhesions will come in and they become detached. And they kind of, I guess, fit in these holes. What happens is that you have these again. When the adhesions are in place, they will not become detached, such as the lobs that are in order. One protects the other, and then what happens is chazer lebriota, and it heals the animal. Like I explained, being a nekev mitgala, and you can't see these holes. But if what you'd be able to do is, if they're all in the right place, if they were to be detached, these adhesions would be detached, then the membrane itself would kind of fall apart. Okay, so we see from here that it's not just enough to blow up your lung. You need to actually do an eye visual inspection as well to make sure there are no adhesions. The second thing they have to be careful in the lung, and not just if it's a trefa, meaning they're defined by a hole, but there's another thing in a lung that could be deficient, and that is what's called, it's chaserah, it is missing an integral part of the lung itself, says the Bar Tanura in source 5. Kegon shechasira achat mechamesh umnot sheyesh l'rei'ai. It's missing one of the lobes that is part of the lung. Okay, that's also render it a terefa. So we see here visual inspection is needed besides from blowing up like a balloon. Okay. Now, six. Amar Rabba, Hani Tarte One Disrichin Lehadade Leis Lehubedika. Says the Gemara, based on Rava, if there are two lobes of the lung and they adhere to one another, they're connected by these thin strands, you don't need to check them. V'lomrin ela shalokasidran avakasidran hainu ribitayu. Says the Gemara in source 6 that if we know, again, you have these two lobes and that they're connected, how they connect them by a strand, they don't have to check. Meaning, we assume that the adhesions that cause the... Yeah, because it's obvious that these are no good, right? That they are clearly are a sign that there's a deficiency in the lung. However, the Gemara says that it only applies to adhesions that are not in order. Meaning, the English here says, where a lobe adhered to a non-adjacent lobe. But with regard to adhesions that are in order, that is the normal manner of growth, and the animal is kosher. So again, you also have situations where adhesions can just grow regularly, right? Where these adhesions can sometimes pop up, the srichin, as they're referred to, and in fact, it doesn't necessarily mean there's a deficiency in the lung. It could just mean it's normal type of growth inside the lung. So the challenge is that you need to know what type of adhesions. Not all adhesions are created equally, right? Sometimes these adhesions will grow inside the lung. Sometimes it's blocking a hole. Sometimes it's just, you know, whatever, just the way it is. So I told you this gets very complicated. Number 7, leslu bidikusa. On that, Rashi says, Shisricha zo machma nekev hiba. Because again, sometimes this adhesion comes because there's an actual hole. That's in which situation? That first situation, where the two lobes of the lung that adhere to one another by thin strands, those are because of a punctured lung. Okay, and that's the problem. Okay? And I explained this already. Meaning, I didn't explain it. I read the Bar Tanura who explained it. And Rashi agrees to the Bar Tanura. Bar Tanura, though, it's coming many years after Rashi, so he's probably copying some of Rashi's language as well. Okay. So these are the issues. Now, on this, Tosfot says that, yes, you can get in an adhesion that is blocking a hole of a lung, but sometimes also an adhesion can come when there is no blocking of the lung. It's, I kind of explained beforehand, right? That's source 8. But so we kind of read that already. Again, the Bar Tanura kind of really summarized these two things. Okay, now this is pretty cool because we're going to see pictures, and everybody likes pictures because pictures are worth a thousand words. I actually have this book Sichat Chulin, that's quoted here. I actually have that book. It's actually not a book that I keep in my office. It's in a book that I keep outside my office. Let's just say it's not a book that I commonly use. But it's a fantastic book with great pictures and diagrams and charts. And it's very helpful. But anyways, I think we can kind of figure out, this is the biology behind it. These are the different strands, how they're connected, what they look like. Okay, fine. And these are the pictures again on page 191 at the top. The outer lobes are joined together with an adhesion. Okay. Next, here we go. Despite the seriousness that some of the Rishon, what time is it? I have no clue. 6:56. Okay, I think we can finish at least this part. Despite the seriousness with which the Rishon treated a sircha, it is not clear that all lesions are considered problematic. Some claim that if one gently rubs... Okay, here's the question. How do you know what type of sircha it is? just by visually seeing it. How am I supposed to know? Is this blocking a hole? So you mentioned, okay, it depends. If there's two, right? You see that, right? If there's two and they're in order, ivory, and how they're connected, is there another way to do it? Okay? Is there another way to do it? So there are those who are going to argue, yeah, there is. If you can rub off the sircha, if you can rub off this adhesion, right? And it disappears, maybe it really is trying to tell me that it was fine, that they're either, and that's actually this inside, it's a little complicated. I'm trying to, despite the decision is, although Rishonim treated a sircha, it is not clear that all lesions are considered problematic. Some claim that if one gently rubs the sircha and it dissolves, it is indicative that it is not problematic and not a problematic lesion, showing that there was a perforation, according to Rashi, or that it would have caused a perforation in the future, according to Tosfot. Oh, we didn't read that inside. There you go. But other Rishonim protested against shochtim, slaughterers, tried to rub the lesions they found in the lungs with their hands in order to dissolve them and claim that the animal is kosher. The Rash was one of those, and he argues that such action should not be allowed. Wow. So now you have tampering. Why? Because you have these sirchas, you have these lesions, and while you have these, adhesions, and what people do, the slaughterers or shechdim would then, you know, try and dissolve them. So they would say, look, this is not a bad adhesion. This is fine adhesion. It's not blocking. It's not covering up a tear or a hole. Wow. Okay. So Rashi, but source number 9 is, I don't like this. Stop rubbing away adhesions. Don't do it. Don't listen to the lenient side. Be machmir and be strict. That's source number 9. In source 10, the Rama says, no, you can do it. He thinks it's a kula, that if you can rub it away, it's a sign that's no good. But it was accepted in Krakow, in Poland, where he lived. That's an amazing thing. And therefore, listen, this is money. This is expensive. People need to eat. And that, my friend, is the number 10 is all about. Wow. And we can end there for today. Anywhere where they said you're not allowed to have these lesions, adhesions, I mean, and have rash bench the asricha daka, doesn't matter if it's thin, bench the other, if it's thick, no good. And sometimes, not like those, you can kind of press them down in order to remove them. Told him, if you're able to press down on them and have them kind of melt away, you're going to press down on them and have them fall apart, then we assume that Tolin lahakel, we can be lenient because it's a sign that's not blocking up a hole. This is the minhag, says the Shulchan Aruch. That's it. That's what we do. The Rama says, yes, so those people who permit it, he says that's the minhag, and we're lenient, and don't prevent people from doing it. That being said, a God-fearing shochet does not press to remove them, press on them and remove them and cause them to fall apart, but he knows how to do it lightly. If you do it too hard, then maybe, in fact,
thank you.
Forcefully doing it, it actually works. Okay, that's enough for today. We continue tomorrow. Have a great day. Tomorrow, we'll have to make a decision about the time. Adrian, how can I get a hold of you to tell you about the time for tomorrow?
Good question. Facebook, email?
Email?
Email's good.
Okay, I think I have your email address, right? What is it again? Just remind me, please.
It's just like firstname.lastname@gmail.com.
That's pretty straightforward. Adrian, let me start typing.
All right, Rabbi.
No, do me a favor, Adrian. Shoot me an email. This way I'll have it. Thanks.
Do I have your email?
Goodbye, y'all.